Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello, friends.
Brian Brushwood.
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely covered in my own gym sweat. That's a common greeting in our hometown. It's sort of like in China, you say, like, have you eaten recently? It's like, are you covered in your own gym sweat? Is the Austin way of greeting each other. And then what you do is you turn and you show the small of your back where hopefully you recently have pedaled on a bicycle. So you've got a little wet spot on the small of your back.
This is the new segment on the show called Brian Wants Everyone to Know He Worked Out. Just
gentlemen.
In case you were wondering, Brian, there should be a website. Has Brian worked out right today?
And the answer is just yes, always, whether it's true or not.
Exactly. Yeah. It'll just be you can set alerts on your phone. So it'll just alert you. You will never be out of touch with Brian.
Every time Brian talks about working out, I'm going to have a bite of a Butterfinger.
So painful.
That's got to be loud and annoying. I'm sorry. Let's jump right in. We haven't done a UFO report.
Yeah. Thank you to everybody who sent in their UFO reports. A couple weeks ago, we asked everybody to let us know, to look at the UFO database and show for us what you guys thought were the most best, hilarious, awesome UFO reports that there were. And boy, how did we get a bunch of them, and sorry for taking so long to get to them.
Yeah, and keep in mind, when we say the best, these aren't just campfire stories here. These are something that an experience somebody had that hit them profoundly enough that they logged this with the Mutual UFO Network. So these are MUFON-related reports about UFOs. Did you have a favorite one to start with?
Because they got such an awesome database. No, I only kind of perused through them a little bit as they came in. I sent them to Bryce to catalog because he is our awesome producer that has been paid for by you, the listener.
Okay. So we've got a and again, this is the genius of Bryce Neshcom Castillo. He'll be the one to let us know if we should read the whole thing or just the highlight. But this one here, the description, this is from Rachel. This is a UFO stalker report from Cobar, New South Wales. And it says, after researching Dulce Base, went out for lunch, and at 104, a plane, very low altitude, around 300 to 600 feet, passed overhead, leaving huge chemtrail. Then another at 111, and many more over a period of 3 hours. The sky gradually filled with clouds. Various random, unusual cloud formations appeared, and then I noticed the UFO-shaped one and was like, this is perfect shape, not a cloud. I took many pictures, my 7 megapixel, and I think some video of all the clouds. By the way, if it sounds like I'm having a hard time reading, it's because it's stuff like sum spelled S-U-M and pictures spelled P-I-T. I realized something. There is a mine here that was shut down, right? Don't know why. And now it's filled with water. And there's this big thing pumping it all out. They say the town will collapse if water's pumped out. Lies, I think. Now I swear I've seen a pic of it empty with a military tank in it. Going to find, right? And strangely, our town has a very high suicide rate. I was told highest in the Southern Hemisphere. Mind control, question mark? I'm thinking there may be something here, because the water that fills this open-cut mine, if copper sulfate or something, and the copper out of it would be worth millions of dollars, yet the owners don't care, and is fenced off. I have seen something, a ghost trying to get me. There at night... inside the fence. Note, I was very drunk. So I don't know, but it scared me to death. I'm going to research this further. I don't think it's coincidence that the first chemtrails I have ever seen start when I begin researching secret government stuff. I will continue to research regardless of quote-unquote effects and consequences. One, I was driving around when at home when I spotted the UFO cloud. Two, its strange shape and eye taking photos of chemtrails. Three, it was a perfect UFO shape, so I thought a possible UFO. Four, stationary. Sadly, I didn't observe it for long, so unsure. Five, in my head, my reaction was holy CMS/TG/PD. I don't know what that means. And I think I felt an OMG feeling during and after. Six, I kept taking pictures, and I don't know what happened to it. Clouds are forming in mass, maybe HARP.
All right, let me get this straight. She saw a, quote, chemtrail.
Right.
That's what we call a contrail.
Right.
You know, in the normal part of the world.
Well, in the aviation circles.
Yeah, where the condensation forms as the plane follows through there. And then clouds started form in this atmosphere shortly after, which one might say that just means that it's, you know, an environment that's conducive to clouds forming.
Well, that's the point,
yeah,
right?
I mean, whatever, if you want to buy that the government go back to bed, America and the world, sure, yeah, this is what happens with condensation and clouds.
I mean,
Brian, were there any photos attached to that?
I did not see any here. There is.
I sent you some photos to maybe pop up there. Email.
Oh, great. On the Gmail. Here we go. UFO pics. I bet this is exactly the kind of thing she's talking about. Now, for those of you watching live, I want you to, in your mind, already prime yourself. You saw some chemtrails. You got like just a weird feeling. You're driving down the highway. You feel like something mysterious is about to happen. And you turn a corner, and sure enough, plain as day, that's what you see in the freaking sky. Tell me that wouldn't freak you out.
It certainly looks odd.
What are those kinds of clouds called again, Andrew?
Round clouds?
No, they got like a fancier name.
Clouds.
Here, I'm just going to type in UFO clouds. I bet it'll give me the proper name.
So the second one is a bit in the original image is a bit more pronounced.
Oh, dude, look at some of these. If you just type in UFO clouds, you get a whole bunch of these. I mean, they really do just like.
But go back for a second to the two that were sent to you.
Sure.
Like, do you know the sources of those?
Oh, is that you?
That was me 2 days ago in UFO country, Mount Hood, right there in the background. Look up. What
great.
Do I see?
That's
obviously.
Wow.
That's so great.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So you got a picture of these clouds in action yesterday.
Yeah, I was funny because I was just sort of like, oh, that's kind of cool. And I didn't stop. You know, I'm like, oh, after the fact, like, oh, maybe I should grab some more photos of it. Let me send you another one here.
Man, look, they got there's some amazing UFO clouds. I am going to lenticular clouds. That's what they're called. Lenticular clouds are the ones that they create these cylindrical kind of columns. They look like half domes. They look like the classic saucer shape of a UFO, if you've ever seen any of those. And especially like at sunset out in the distance, they look like these perfect spheres floating above the horizon. That's amazing. And look at this one. This is like a five-decker over a mountain here, over Mount Fuji. That's phenomenal.
Well, yeah, and you saw the one that the first one that I sent was like a triple that at one point was probably right over the mountain.
Yeah, and it looks like it blew off to the side. You're right.
Yeah.
In fact, I kind of want to. Do you want to give me a moment? I want to find out how lenticular clouds are formed. Lenticular clouds, according to Wikipedia here, says that they're lens-shaped clouds. That's a great way to put it. That form in the troposphere, normally in perpendicular alignment to the wind direction. Lenticular clouds can be separated into a bunch of blah 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 science stuff. Formation. The air flows along the surface of the Earth and encounters obstructions. These are man-made objects like buildings and bridges. They're natural features like hills, valleys, and mountains. All of them disrupt the flow of air into eddies. So basically, as the air flows over, and just like if you've ever gone canoeing and your oar, as you paddle, makes a little spinning eddy behind it, that's what happens when the wind blows over a mountain and makes these little UFO clouds. That's amazing.
That's what they want you to think, Brian.
Yeah, no, whatever, sucker.
Yeah.
Well, and you bring up a good point too, because like if conditions are right to form contrails, then oftentimes that means the pressure is such that clouds are easy to form with a difference of pressure.
But also it's like the idea that this is abnormal or special to us is kind of odd when you really break it down, because why do we think that clouds look the way they do? You know, it is kind of this amazing phenomenon no matter what. Like, why does the sky look the way that it does? There are times where I wake up and the sky is this like insane shade of like pink and orange that you would, if you were in a movie, characters would look out the window and be like, oh my God, I wonder what's happening. You know, yeah. It would be that odd, but we don't really worry about it. You know, these things kind of change and shift all the time. The fact that like there are circular disk clouds that happen sometimes really should be like the least crazy thing in the world.
Yeah. And that was, in, you know, it's funny because it was random that, you know, I took these photos Friday, just driving along on, and you know, we look out the window and we see that. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. I didn't even think to take photos. I'm like, oh, wait, this might make a good weird things topic. Took the photos. And then randomly we had our topic today brought up, that UFO report with lenticular clouds.
The first UFO report. That's amazing.
I didn't try to be a UFO hunter, guys. They just found me.
Yeah. You didn't choose the UFO hunter life. The UFO hunter life chose you. All of these pictures, by the way, could be an album cover for Explosions in the Sky. Oh,
yeah. Gentlemen, I think we could do another UFO report next week. I think we've got some other stuff to jump into here.
Are we going
to
hold off?
And, so I want you guys to keep them coming. JustinRobertYoung@gmail.com. If you want to search the UFO database that we went over a few weeks ago, and if Neshcom can throw me the link to that database, I'll be happy to say it here on the show. You can go ahead and send them in, and we'll try to do one for as long as we get good ones, you know, because we certainly like this kind of stuff.
Well, and it's funny because there's always so many different angles to look at it. Like in this case, we got caught up in just the cloud formation stuff. But meanwhile, we could have chatted about the chemtrails aspect and the whole origins of that thing, because it's not the dumbest. I always wanted to blow off people who are like, oh, chemtrails, people just don't understand what contrails are. But meanwhile, it's like there's enough actual, like the government has run operations where they're seeding clouds, you know, and they have dropped chemicals at different points. But that doesn't mean every time you see a line in the sky that it's mind control juice being sprayed out.
Yeah, probably doesn't mean that.
That's it, exactly.
Go ahead and roll the dice on it's not that.
So we want to jump into the EM drive?
Yeah. I need you to explain it to me, because I read the article on it and I saw your tweets wherein you casually mentioned like, yeah, how come nobody's reporting the fact that this essentially means warp drive is possible?
So we'll back up a bit. So NASA has an advanced research group, or advanced propulsion group, headed by Sonny White, who is a very interesting figure who's been out there putting some resources into some areas of research that might be considered fringe, but I think that we should be investigating. I absolutely think that when enough smart people think there might be something to it, then, you know, let's look at it. Let's consider it. Let's not just throw it out. One of these things is the EM drive, which is a proposed form of propulsion. And what it is, it's basically a microwave emitter inside of a sealed chamber that somehow manages to move in a single direction, even though it's not emitting any mass, and it's not like shooting photons out the back. It's like 1,000 times more powerful than, let's say, a photon rocket. And this seems to violate what we understand about physics, although there's an explanation that says that it uses, basically, there's a magnetohydro drive, which is like the Hunt for Red October, which is the idea of propelling yourself through the water, you know, kind of like track using the water sort of drag you through magnetically. And this is, says it does it with kind of the quantum foam. And it's
okay. So this is, and again, I'm dumb, and I'm on the outside. And I suspect that you know a little bit more than me, but if I read what articles I did correctly, it's that, the reason it looks impossible is because it's able to take energy and without any propellant, without using any fuel up, that is dispensed out the back, it's able to achieve some form of propulsion, right? That's the part of why it shouldn't work, correct?
Right. You're not losing any mass, yet you're still moving forward,
right.
Which would seem to imply that you should you know, it should be stationary. It shouldn't do this.
Right.
So we have lots of theories to explain why it shouldn't work, but then there's theories, you know, fringe theories explain why it should work. But the most important thing is what happens when you put it in a laboratory and turn it on? Because we can sit around arguing, you know, yes or no, does it violate the conservation of momentum or mass, et cetera? Does it move? And NASA, some researchers there a few months ago, or about a year or so ago, did one experiment with it, and they appeared to see that it was moving in one direction. And people said, well, there's so much possibility for experimental error. It needs to be done in a vacuum because it could be some thermal effect. One side could be warmer than the other, which would cause it to move in one direction. So now they said that they've done this. And this, by the way, comes to us from not an official NASA press release. This comes from NASASpaceflightNow.com, or a forum, and people from claiming to be from researchers involved in there have put out a paper saying, and not a real formal research paper either, this is more of a lab report saying this is what's happened. They say they put this into a vacuum chamber and they have measured a very, very strong effect of it moving in one direction. Now, this is big. This is big if it's real. As we've seen before with, you know, the prior research we've had, you know, the word that, oh, we managed to send a particle around that maybe goes faster than the speed of light, which we all knew wasn't true, you know, but we wanted to know why that wasn't the case. Now, here is something that we're all going to say, probably there's experimental error. Probably it's bogus, but it's worth putting some resources into finding out, is it? Because if there is something there, if there is some process that we're previously unaware of not of how it could work, then, you know, spending a couple $1 million would probably be a good idea if it's being handled by credible, responsible people.
Well, let's also take a look real quick at the narrative reasons why this has gotten so much press and why it has gathered so much fascination. The is it M or EM? M drive?
EM.
EM drive. The EM drive is something that, like, seems to narratively have started in this very, like, you know, I know it's not exactly this, but like Kook in his garage kind of experimentation.
Perpetual motion machine man guy.
Yeah. Very, very primer, you know, like, you know, kind of, you know, origin. And now has seemed to move up to a higher, more credible resource with some, you know, heft to it that has seemingly validated it. So when we wonder why this is capturing people's fascination, because it seems like it is progressing through mini bosses, that this is like, oh, okay, another level with more to lose has said that there is something to this. And so now it should advance to the next level. But that's where kind of our narrative brain and our science brain should kind of go two separate ways, because while we kind of want it to keep going and keep, you know, validating itself throughout these different trials and systems, you have to actually show the work and repeat it over and over and over again for us to really get excited about
it. So they've said that there's been independent verification of it at some other laboratories, but again, there's not been a formal paper yet that's been submitted. What the implication here is exciting is the idea that if this works, and there may be, you know, some mechanism we haven't been aware of, whatever, if this works, it means you can get to Mars in weeks. It means you can get to the outer planets in under a year. It means that the solar system becomes much, much more accessible using power sources that are conventional today. Taking something off of a nuclear submarine, you know, a nuclear reactor off of one of those, and popping it into a spaceship would provide you enough power to go to these places.
Yeah, what is it, like 90% of the entire weight of a rocket is just the fuel to get you anywhere? Like all of a sudden, if that becomes a self-contained, especially for, let's say, a reusable craft that's just going there and back, and you just have to, you know, resupply some energy for, you know, fission in there, and then you're good to go, that would fundamentally change a lot of things.
Yeah, it means that there's a lot of implications there. And what was interesting in the report that they had, though, at the bottom of the report, they talk about one of the theories of this device is that it might warp space around it to some extent. And they have a – if you can find the link to the actual account that they put up there, you'll see where they talk about how, I guess, like, you know, the spectrum of light was bent or changed within some measurable amount in the experimental apparatus, and that's when it starts to get very, very spooky and interesting.
Is this, am I looking at the right article? I looked at the one at NASASpaceflight.com. The end of April 29th, I think, evaluating NASA's futuristic EM drive. But the only reference to Spectrum is at the bottom. It says over 27,000 cycles of data, blah, blah, blah. Power Spectrum revealed a signal frequency of something.
Go to the one possible explanation, the very back bottom, back down where you were before.
There you go. One possible explanation for the optical path length change is that due to the refraction of the air, the NASA team examined the possibility and concluded it's not likely that the measured change is due to transient air heating because the experiment's visibility threshold is 40 times larger than the calculated effect from air considering atmospheric heating. Can you translate for me that?
So when they're saying the optical path length means how long does it take light to move through this field that they've created? And they're saying is that it changes it, that it may have a shorter path. I assume that's what they were implying there. It changed it. So basically what they're saying is they're warping space.
Wow. That'd be rad.
So we've got, you know, and that's the problem, though, is we've got one, wow, this is an amazing little discovery here about the EM drive, which is really, really cool. And then, oh, yeah, this thing might be warping space, too, which that's when it gets to be, you know.
And again, like we hear you. Yes, unlikely, but, you know. Maybe.
Well, but it's like, this is really the DNA of this podcast. Like, yeah, sure, it's probably unlikely. But this drive to find out whether or not it's unlikely and either to safeguard our zeal for the impossible or to actually, dare we say, find the impossible is the whole reason why we do this show. It is the spirit for which we, if we contribute anything positive to the body of discussion, it hopefully is that. Is like, yes, you should chase it down with equal verve if to disprove or to find to be true.
Now, what have you seen when we saw the I'm talking about kind of the meta reaction here. When we saw the reports that say neutrinos possibly faster than light response or whatever, you know, we were like, how rad would that be? And we're talking, but universally in the science media, everyone was like, shut up. Stop liking this. It's not real. It won't be real. I'm telling you in advance. And then sure enough, it was proved wrong. And they're like, well, told ya.
Even here, we were like, this isn't real, but this is really cool to think about.
Sure.
You know, yeah. We were, I would say that we were appropriately skeptical, yet opening up the door for optimism and saying, let's, you know, it's like, nope, the door's locked, the door's shut. There might be a crack and we'll entertain that possibility because wouldn't it be cool if it was, and it doesn't cost us anything. And I think that, as you pointed out, there is that reaction to like, you know, everybody stop having fun. It's like, all right, listen. There are people who are going to believe in chemtrails, and next week I think we should do the Black Knight satellite. There are going to be people who are just going to jump all over that no matter what, regardless of the evidence. You know, where I think our domain expertise is, yeah, we get the science. We understand, you know, we understand why this isn't likely to be true. But let's play a game called what if.
Yeah.
And let's encourage, when it's relatively sane or responsible, people who have, you know, shown the willingness to go pursue higher education and work in laboratories and facilities and work with other people and participate in the process of science. When those people, the ones who are participating in science, are saying, hey, we found something weird or unusual, then absolutely, let's explore that. Let's indulge that a little bit, because every now and then paradigms, you know, for every thousand times that we think the paradigm could be shifted, it's not. It's not going to happen. But that one time that it does makes it worth it.
Yeah, man.
Hensler guy, who is, you know, very science minded and an engineer himself, says here in the chat room that it could be real, that the idea has been around for long enough and has held, I guess I'm reading into what he's saying, but has held water for long enough that possibly. I mean, like it's enough to give at the very least an emoji shoulder shrug.
Yeah, well, I think that, again, that it's people who do science things are interested in it. And I think that, you know, you get enough people who've done the due diligence to get their PhDs in physics and stuff who are saying, hey, this is interesting to us. It doesn't mean that it's true, but I certainly think that if they're qualified to figure out what's worth pursuing. And I know some physicists, I know some people who are well-trained physicists, absolute nuts, absolutely nutty ideas, demonstrably false ideas that you can just pick apart. And it's amazing they got as far as they did. But on the other hand, let's encourage the spirit of discovery.
Heck yeah.
And so, dude,
while we're encouraging things, can we encourage people to head on over to patreon.com/weirdthings and support our little endeavor?
Yeah, man. So here's the deal. What you got to do is head on over to patreon.com/weirdthings. If you dig this show, you can go ahead and support it. Kick in a little bit of money. That's all right. If you ain't got no money, just go ahead and tell a friend. You know, be our pal. Go on iTunes. Leave a review. There's plenty of ways to support the show. But if you got a few extra pennies in your pocket, head on over there and make sure that you keep us doing this show every single week, Sundays at 2 o'clock Pacific time, 5 o'clock Eastern time.
Heck yeah, man. And by the way, we are at a new all-time record. We're creeping up to that fabulous $666 per episode, which will mean that we've hit one-third of our goal of a self-sustaining Glide Ion podcast. That's the science.
So, as Tensor Guy pointed, Popular Mechanics, I'm just looking over here, has, you still shouldn't believe in the EM drive. Well, I don't think we believe in it. Not ready to, you know, start making t-shirts.
It ain't like we could vote on it to exist or not. What does believing in it have to do with anything? Like, screw you, believe in it, whatever.
Well, I mean, I guess that's kind of the thing that I think has frustrated us sometimes. There is this idea that spending time thinking about something on some level equals, if even nascent levels of true, like, belief or legitimization of it, which is, like, so odd that it's like, yes, the same people who understand that, like, list the X-Files as among their favorite shows.
Yeah. Can we real quick, like just look at this headline and just quite quick side diatribe on this. You still shouldn't believe in the M drive. First of all, if this is a publication of note, if this is journalism, then since when are journalists in the business of telling you what you should or should not believe?
Well, I mean, this is a blog post.
It doesn't matter. It's like, look, the point is you want to state this in an accurate way. You know, like the reasons the M drive is highly unlikely. That is a flat way to put it. This you shouldn't believe crap is nonsense.
Well, I mean, yeah. I disagree with the sentiment. I'm totally with you in the sentiment. I would defend his right to write that headline. You know,
that's fine.
It's a blog post that has his big face on it, so it has the characteristics of a column. You know, so it is very well labeled. You know, as kind of his opinion. In my opinion, it's labeled as his opinion. But I am frustrated at the big frowny face of, like, people are excited about something. Don't be excited.
What's funny is the subhead should have been the headline. It's a cool idea, but the headlines are getting out of hand again. That's your thesis. The whole thesis of this article is that headlines are getting out of hand. That is a good thesis. I don't understand why you're roping me into it and say that I'm a bad person for believing in a thing. That's dumb as crap.
Yeah. I mean, the subhead is where I get a little upset, because it's like, all right, so is this a critique of journalism?
We could parse this back and forth, but yeah. I'm going to move us on.
Fair enough.
Do you see the look of disappointment in my eyes?
I see your eyes.
I see your eyes, bro.
Yeah, what's wrong? Is everything cool? Yeah. Andrew.
Speaking of technologies you have such high hopes for and you're excited about, you know, and
uh-oh,
then you just look at with glee.
Uh-oh.
Not the Apple Watch, Brian.
Okay.
I thought that's where we're headed. You know, sometimes you see something, it just captures your heart and makes you soar, makes you feel like you're flying in the air and the world, we're in the future. You're like, yes, we're in the future. And you start flipping off the past, you know, and just, you know, turning around, just flipping off the people behind you. That's not the past.
Sure, yeah.
You ask a gorilla what happened yesterday, they look behind you. You ask me to flip off the past, it's what I do. There was a demo. It was an exciting demo. It was a Microsoft HoloLens demo a few months ago.
Uh-huh.
That were like, hey, listen, look at this. Microsoft HoloLens, boom, they're in the game, right?
Did you try it? Did you?
No. I've been reading every single person who has now tried this. So Microsoft did this amazing demo showing the HoloLens, which like looked awesome. You put on this lens, this setup. You look all around your room, and Minecraft is everywhere. Walls fall away, and there's a Minecraft world, and you can play amazing games and carry on. It just overlays. It's augmented reality, overlays virtual reality on top of your reality, which is just incredible, right? So, and we're all like, well, that looks cool, but like, you know, remember when we saw that Google Glass demo, right? The first Google Glass demo, guys are jumping out of balloons, parachuting on top of buildings, and then like BMX biking around, and are like, and they're like, the Google Glass is capturing it. You see this video overlay as you're having conversations with people, and it's like, oh my God, that's so cool, right? And then Google Glass came out, and you find out that like, well, no, it's not a 3D thing in front of you. It's a little window that floats off up to the side, up above you here in your corner.
Right.
And that was that, like, we're like, wow, that totally is not what we saw. Because in that commercial, you watched it in the middle of the frame, and you kind of assume when you look, that's what you're going to see, not just this little tiny bubble in the corner here that's sort of not exciting. So Microsoft, and then so Google Glass came out with a big disappointment. And, you know, I feel bad for anybody on this podcast that, well, you got somebody else to pay for it, Justin, so you're okay. It was not the future we wanted. No. So now we're looking at this demo right now for the Microsoft HoloLens. And some guy just walks into his room, pops open a big screen TV, right? He's got a virtual dog next to him. Not a real dog, a virtual dog there. And they did a demo on stage, and they had a camera with a HoloLens system built onto the camera so we could see what's going on. And we could see this person walking around, you know, interacting with this blended augmented reality. It was kick-ass. Well, very few people got to do demos of it, and there were some reports about it being kind of cool. Now they've had 100 or so people have been able to do demos at the Microsoft Build conference, and we find the big catch.
Uh-oh.
What the big catch is.
What a dork you look like with the giant helmet on.
Listen, you do this in the privacy of your home. What difference
is it? No, the idea is the trade-off. Listen, if the product is worth it, I will wear a big chicken head on my face.
Yeah.
Walk around in public if the product's there.
Brian, if you're like, hey, do you want to put the chicken heads and we're all going to meet in a park in Austin and play World of Warcraft or a Lord of the Rings level against real orcs?
Come on. You're talking to a dude who dressed up like Guile in his head face for 15 years.
Yeah, I'm all in. We're all going to be there, okay? You know, we're going to look like the most, you know, silly
dorky. You can say dorky. That's fine.
No, my political correctness, I had to cross off about 5 different words before I finally got to something I could use.
Of course.
So here is what the catch is. You ready for the catch?
Ready for the catch.
Anybody have your phone in front of you?
I do.
Take out your phone.
Yeah.
Take your phone. Hold it maybe about arm's length in front of you about in front of you. Like turn it sideways like
this. All right. Done.
Okay.
Yeah.
Imagine that's the window you're looking through.
Oh, my God. Really? Yeah.
It's got a very, I don't know, maybe exact, but it's like a narrow field of view in front of you. So you've got
this
field of view.
So it's like you're wearing blinders. So
you can look through it. I'm like, oh, cool. If I look over there, it's gone. And so they say that if you watch the demos and like you see this woman watching, like there's like a body appears in front of her and then like she can do this anatomical, like watch the skin peel away and all that. They said, yeah, if you're there, you're going to see the head and the shoulders. When the guy covers his wall, right now, this guy, he might see the Skype window. He doesn't see the window to the side or the other window there. Even though it's in his field of view, it's not in there. They're saying like he will not see this whole screen. So he just stretched a screen to cover the whole wall.
Wow.
He's not going to see that. This woman's going to see the ears and the shoulder, not the whole body. So
do you see the rest of the room?
You see the rest of the room, but you're looking at there these lenses that float in front of you, which I don't know if they're like an LCD shutter that back blocks out like the certain space.
Gotcha.
So or whatever. But it's you're looking, you have a small little window that you're looking directly in front that you see it, but your eyes can look around and all around it and you won't see the holograms.
Yeah. Oh, there it is. There it is right there. They're showing right now where the hologram is visible. You have the entire field of view, and it's like a quarter of the entire field of view is actually hologram visible. Everything else is non-enhanced.
Which would be jarring. You know, the difference is in this, we look at this, it looks like it's this consistent reality where you look, you turn this thing on and your room becomes this room. I got this little monocle that I get to look through and see it and not see the rest of it.
Here's my question with this kind of stuff.
I give up, guys.
No way. Don't give up.
No.
The dream is alive.
Don't. So with these kinds of technologies, I don't understand why, and this was with Google Glass and the same thing with HoloLens, why not just keep this stuff more under the radar and let it kind of seep out through kind of like giving it to people to work on it and saying, listen, this is, I mean, like Apple has the Apple TV, right? The idea of where cord cutting is and we're buying stuff via non-cable and satellite providers is a burgeoning reality. And Apple's called that a hobby forever because they don't want it, its success or relative lack of success to be tied to Apple and their major other releases that they really say these are the things that you should judge Apple for. Why isn't this a big fat branded hobby, like just a like, hey, we're just tossing this out here? Because I feel like this product, as you've explained it, if looked at as, yeah, you want to know what? We got these R&D departments. We know that stuff is going here in the future. We just want to be part of it. So we're getting this stuff out here into the hands of people who want to develop on it.
What? So I will say the really cool thing that they have done, the really amazing part of the technology, and I think the reason why they wanted to announce what they've done is this is very different than Oculus Rift. Oculus Rift, Sony Gear, those things are – they're immersive. You don't see the world around you. You just see the screen, and then they have tracking to figure out where your head is in space. By all accounts, everybody who's done this, Microsoft says the tracking is pretty fantastic. That it, because it's mapping the room you're in and figuring out where all the surfaces are, which is an incredible achievement. That is an incredible technological achievement to have this one head-mounted thing, not putting dots on the walls, not like with my Oculus Rift setup, got to have another sensor in front of you. So the Microsoft technology is light years ahead of where Oculus is in tracking and being able to put the cameras, because they're using Kinect technology. They've got a really incredible piece of, you know, the system in there that can map your room you're in and then overlay. So that's incredible. The disappointing part is we only get this tiny little screen. And I'm sure there are very practical reasons for why that's the case, but as Justin pointed out, you know, Apple having, hey, the hobby approach or whatever, to do that demo the way they did, it feels like a lie.
Well, it feels like Microsoft.
But they've got such an – I'm rooting for that company in the biggest way.
Listen, anybody who's listened to the Daily Tech News Show, I have every single week in and week out, we have stories that illustrate that indeed Satya Mania is running wild. What you gonna do when Satya Mania runs wild on you? They are doing great stuff under Nadella's leadership. I think that they are certainly a company that is heading in the right direction. The problem is that Microsoft is the boy who cried wolf with this stuff, right? They are the kings of vaporware.
Yeah, and back to your original question, Andrew, of why not keep it quiet? I mean, the answer is because they're publicly funded, and they know that there's millions of more dollars of investment in stock prices.
I don't have a problem with. I don't think they keep quiet.
Wait, hold on. Is it publicly funded would mean they're government funded, privately funded? I guess privately funded.
You mean publicly traded, yeah.
But you publicly traded. That's where I was. Yeah, they were
publicly traded. I don't think that should be necessarily a secret, but that demo they released is not what you get to. That's just like for my own, like I have this excitement, and then it's like, oh no, that's not what it is. It's like, I had such high hopes, and now they're dashed.
Yeah,
because
there's a way to get the press you want. Releasing a big demo and making it a big part of your keynote, one of the first keynotes of note under the Nadella regime, is that's a big spot. That's where you would announce an Xbox. That's where you would announce a new – I mean that's where they did announce the new Windows operating system, you know? And if you – during that press conference, you make a little you bring in a few friendly journalists, people that you know are going to give you a fair shake. You put that demo on their head. You show them that, and you let them rave about this, you know, like, oh, my God, they've cracked tracking. Oh, my God, they've cracked surface recognition. Oh, my God, they've done this, this, that, and the other. And it's going to come out sometime in the next year and a half. Now, all of a sudden, you've got a build, and you set your leadership up to say, all right, guys, no, listen, we're really excited about it. We've been working with it forever, but it's not ready to go yet. We're doing a lot of iterations. We hope to continue to show people what this is going forward. And so when this comes out and it's like, okay, it's everything that we knew, but it's just a field of vision, we look at it as, that's way better than Google Glass. That's way better than anything that's publicly available right now, instead of, you promised us a pony and all we got was a mini horse.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I never really expect – I always expected, ever since any of our conversations about it, that there would be some kind of severely crippling hiccup or hitch to it. Like I always felt like there was going to be a trick in there. And if the trick turns out to be that the field of view is smaller than we'd like for, you know, to eventually get to, then yeah. But I mean, it's like – I mean, you know, it's a Gen 1 product, and at least it's a Gen 1 product that, you know, granted the screen isn't as big or as wide as we'd like, it apparently is doing the thing that it claims, right?
Well,
I guess it's how you interpret that video. I guess when you watch that, you know, like when you watch that first demo video and you're told this is what the camera sees and you realize, no, that's not, this is what you see. And now the people, and again, Microsoft still can say, we don't have all the facts, but when you're having the people say, no, that's not your experience. They told you this is what this looks like. This is not what it looks like. That's the jarring part.
This was we talked about Microsoft kind of coming out of nowhere because of the Google Ventures investment, like $500 million. And what's the competitor that's still
Magic Leap,
right? So it's like they're doing exactly what you're proposing, right, Justin? Where it's like they're keeping it quiet and on the DL. They're like, yeah, we're just doing a thing. Think it's pretty good.
And they have done less than what I had proposed Microsoft do with HoloLens. They have. It is basically just word of mouth. And you know, if to assume that there are leaks, which I would assume.
Don't forget that video they released with Weta.
Well, so, yeah. But before that, you just had this, like, the buzz in the valley on people that knew that a bunch of money was going into. And then a few kind of guarded quotes that this is going to change everything. Post HoloLens, you saw a bunch of shade coming out from the CEO of Magic Leap, you know, which basically amounted to him, you know, making a fart noise with his mouth and doing the rolling the dice motions. And then they came out with their Weta demo, which had all the audacity, more so than HoloLens. That was, you know, if we're going to look at that as a demonstration of what they can do, it was as if not more ambitious than what HoloLens has promised us. So they've certainly set themselves up where we are going to expect them to deliver quite a bit because they have been reactive to what HoloLens has done.
Yeah, I don't know. But the problem is this is all stuff we were sold in the late 90s, right? I mean, when you'd go to the mall and they'd have some ridiculous faux VR rig, I remember being excited about that at the time.
This is the first time that I've kind of looked at it, but like, you know, you have the motion blur at you know, like it does have its own kind of field of vision that, you know, who knows, you know, how much, you know, what they're trying to say is that you will be able to see very clearly within this, but then outside of it, it will either be degraded or fuzzy.
Yeah. So you've got Magic Leap, which I guarantee you in the next week or so, when we first saw HoloLens, our prediction was we're going to hear something from Magic Leap because they're going to want to say, hey. And I guarantee you this next week or something, we're going to hear something about Magic Leap. Well, our field of vision is this, you know, and I think they're going to kind of throw more shade on it. And then there's another one. I think Technical Illusion is another company that they've got a demo out of their video. If you want to look up Technical Illusions and see theirs, you can see their demo video of what they're promising, which is it's a bit of an awkward video, but it's got, you know, the technology. And again, it's a big, the gear looks very unsexy, but
Technical Illusions Inc. or Unstable
Cast, the Cast AR. That's
Cast
their,
AR. Got it. All right. Yeah. So we're looking at it now. I haven't seen this at all. What's their story? Are they another competitor?
Another company building their own system for doing this augmented reality. And so, you know, glasses are on. They're looking at a 3D model of a building on top of a blueprint.
You are not kidding. That is only two shades below wearing a gigantic chicken head.
their glasses are they're like zany zappers from the 1980s. But the gameplay looks, here's a kid and is, you know, stole.
See, now this does
glasses.
Look very believable. This looks like somebody made the mistake of showing what the product would actually look like. Instead, the kid steals his mom's gear.
He's doing a shoot 'em up. The daughter's now playing some tabletop game on top of, like, you know, watching, you know, soldiers and figures move across it. Now she's shooting, and you know, it's like a little, like it's like building a little 3D model on top of a table and being able to play and move things around. Now dad stole it, and now he's looking at, I guess, the ping pong table covered with a tablecloth. And he's got a whole workspace there that he can use, which doesn't seem the most practical way to do that kind of work. But, you know, who am I to judge?
Of course, that's of course what all dads would do with a VR thing after all the kids, right?
Do you think that's so cliche as if to kind of point out that, yeah, that's not what dad's going to use it for? Yeah.
No. Oh, no, it won't.
Youngest daughter stole it, and she's now playing a paper airplane navigating game, and now the mom goes to check her purse to make sure that the VR goggles are there, which I guess they're saying, listen, a family won't be able to afford it. You have to have somebody work at a place where they can buy it.
Right, and then you're going to have to steal it all around. You can't all have your own.
Yeah, it's like a, you know, like a 1982 portable computer sort of commercial, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that, to be honest, I'm kind of tuned out. Knock on my door in 5 more years, maybe 10 more years, and it'll actually be what we actually want.
I'm excited for Microsoft in this. This is not them getting to the market way too early. And declaring, like, well, people don't want tablets. We tried. Anyway, peace out. And then tablets become gigantic, you know, 8 years after, and they're just kind of left holding their dingles and saying, well, we tried. Everybody hated them. Oops. It's society's fault, not us. So it seems like they are in at least the right time frame. They certainly have the brains. And I'm a believer in Satya. I'm a believer in Satya Mania. I'm a Satya maniac. I think that they have their priorities in line. I hope that HoloLens continues to develop, but for HoloLens's sake, if this is not out for a year and a half, and the specs at launch are better than what these demos have been, I think it'll be a better product. And I think that that's where Microsoft, if they are indeed a changed company, needs to continue to lead is over delivering as opposed to under delivering based on expectations.
Yeah. I'm excited that we have so many companies trying to get into this space.
Carl in the chat room says, in before Ashley makes 10 virtual birds, which will certainly happen.
So talking about Gen 1 products, do you want to, Justin, when are you supposed to get your Apple Watch?
Never. I'm doomed to live without it forever because Apple hates me and everybody around me is getting one and I don't have one and I'm not upset about it.
showing you this isn't
I'm not upset. Ryan, I'm not upset. I'm sick of people saying I'm upset. All right? There's no problem with it. Sure, it just takes a little longer for me to get mine. Everybody has theirs. Okay? All right? I'm not upset!
So there's some things that are really curious to me that are very un-Apple about the Apple Watch launch.
I don't have it on day one? Is that the problem? Yeah. All these other devices I've had at day one.
Not
upset.
Like, for example, they very carefully explained the reason that there's a digital crown, a button knob, whatever, is because it's not, you know, it's difficult to be precise in your actions on the screen. That's why they added this thing, is because pinch and zoom doesn't make sense on a small screen and being precise is difficult. And then they turn around and say that, and now, of course, the reason that you need it is so that you can draw little tiny pictures to someone on this amazingly tedious screen. Like, I wanted to just write a single 5-letter word and wasn't able to do it or send it to anyone because it was the screen thing was not precise on it. But anyway, schizophrenic.
I'm not going to say that I'm in love and I see the why. It's one of those things where I look and I go, why did they do this? I'm like, and I tell myself, they probably have very good reasons that I don't appreciate, understand, because I hadn't spent 5 years developing it like they did. But they did say the reason they did the digital crown was also so that you could look through things without covering it with your finger as you're scrolling through lists.
Okay.
And that was the key reason, is that, you know, you're not like because if you put your finger over it, you lose half the screen when you're scrolling through. That's, you can still scroll through.
I will say this much, and I want to – I'm not going to blame Apple. I'm going to blame – actually, I am going to blame Apple. I'm not going to blame all – like right now, the most obviously broken-ass part of the watch is all of the bugginess in all of the apps and all of the poor design decision that have happened in the apps. It's almost as though everyone had to design their app with no single developer having the ability to actually try it out on a watch, which, by the way, is exactly how they all had to develop their apps. And specifically, right now, when you, the one thing I was excited, the moment I got it, I went for an extra run because I knew it would be integrated with the Map My Run service that I use, and I love it on my app on my Pebble. And so I'm out running, and while I'm running, so you're picturing, you know, like you're on mile three and you want to know how you're doing. So you pick up, you look at your watch and you realize you lifted it too fast. And it's like, you have to hold it steady while you're running and then twist it just right so that it turns on. And then it's like, oh, great. Now it's showing, the clock. It's showing the clock. I don't want the clock. So let me, still running. Let me click the thing. No, not that one. Let me switch this. I got
to
go.
Just double tap to go to the last app you had open.
Okay. Right. The first move you have to do is you look at your watch and all you want to know is how far you've gone. So you lift up your watch. First thing you see is a clock. And you're like, I don't care about a clock. I care about the fact that I'm running, and you know I'm running, watch. You should know better than to show me the time. So fine. So I double tap and it opens up the app. It says you've been running for 3 minutes or for 30 minutes. I'm like, don't care about that. Swipe over. And it's like, your pace is whatever. I'm like, don't care about that. Swipe over while you're running.
Right.
And
so,
and then you,
is it the watch or the app? Is this the different?
It's the app. It's the app. It's dumb. It's dumb.
Which
dumb.
App
dumb.
Is this?
It's the Map My Run app. And, but all
so
of
that's
these,
not the Apple app. That's a different. Okay. Gotcha.
No. Yes. This is my point. Right. Okay. So the point is they build it in while you're running that to access one bit of information, you have to go through literally five different menus to get there. And then once you get there, your watch has the brain of a goldfish. And then the next time, a mile later, you look at your watch, it's like, oh, you want the time again? Here's the time. And you're like, no. And then you get to do it all over again. And it's like, it's just dumb,
okay.
dumb.
We need to parse this, though, because that sounds like a horribly designed app. Okay. I've had wonderful experience with the Yelp app. Yelp on the watch is fantastic. We're driving somewhere. Where do you want to eat? I open up the Yelp app, and it gives me four options. And I can press one is for restaurants, one is for bars, one is for coffee, tea, hot new. I click restaurants. And it'll tell me I have the ratings for the one 100 feet away from me, mm-hmm. you know, immediately. It is a wonderfully designed app because what they've done is they said, if you're on your watch, what information do we need to give you right away? They stripped down what Yelp does on the phone and said, let's make a great version of Yelp for the watch. And it's perfect. I mean, for me, I go, oh, this is wonderful because I click, boom, I know we can be driving and we can see a restaurant. And I go, oh, let me just open up Yelp. And I've got the reviews of it in two clicks. That app that you have there, poorly designed, absolutely poorly designed.
But these are just indicators of an immature ecosystem. This is stuff that they're working on for the first time. For example, meanwhile, keep in mind, I'm coming from Pebble, which is a fairly mature smartwatch ecosystem. They figured out things, for example, once you start running, when you look at your watch, it will only show you. It doesn't even care about the time. It shows you everything all in one screen. It doesn't make it pretty. It says you've run. It's been this amount of time. This is your current pace. This is the number of miles you've run. All available at a glance. And you never have to touch your watch or what when you're riding or running or any of that stuff. I suspect all of it will get better, but it's like it's just hard to be in what feels like a very beta phase for this. And even, and this is not fair to compare to a mature ecosystem to an immature one, but like on the Pebble, when a text comes in across the room, I know that I only have to wait a half second and then just glance at my watch and I'll see what the text says. That's not the case right now. It's a text comes in and first, I feel it vibrate, but I can't just look. I have to the vibrate says you have a message and it's in. Then I have to properly execute the looking at my watch move. Then it just shows me the icon of the text icon and says the message is from Twitter. And it's up to me to click on it. Again, another phase I have to do. I have to do it and I have to scroll. And if there are any previous messages, I have to scroll through all those previous messages down to the bottom and then manually dismiss it in order to see it. There's just so much touching and moving that's unnecessary. And
are there dials on the notification stuff? Like, can you change the notification settings?
I'm sure I'm using it all wrong, but I didn't have to go through an orientation video for the Pebble.
No, and it's not the Pebble, and it does things very different than Pebble, and it does things Pebble cannot do, and Pebble's got a fantastic battery life that this is. By the way, battery life on this has been great for me. It's a very different, you know, thing. But there absolutely are the notifications. You can change that, adapt that, and you can go to, like, I go to Glances when I want to see Twitter. I click up, and boom, there's my Twitter. You know, so that's how I do it. And so I guess it's. If you walk into a platform wanting to be the other platform, it's not going to be that. And I think there are flaws. There are problems where I run into it and I don't get why they did it. And I assume that they have reasons for it. And I do think some apps I've had on here are horribly designed and some are wonderfully designed. And it's been a very mixed bag. And people ask me, I didn't fall in love with this thing like I did my iPhone or my iPad or my MacBook. Absolutely have not fallen in love with like those other things. But as I spend, I'm with a week with it now, and I look at it, how do I use it on a trip? I'm like, oh, my God, the thing that it used to be, pull out my phone, do all this sort of stuff, so much easier just to pull out this. Maps, middle of a national park. I press a button, boom, oh, that's where we are. You know. And so it's everybody's case is going to be different. That was my prediction, and I hold to it.
And for the record, I'm fine with adjusting and learning a new language. I understand it's a different thing, and I don't want to be the guy that's like, well, I like the one thing, and I want to stick to the one thing. I understand that it's me that's broken. I need to understand what song they're singing. But meanwhile, it is an awkward transition, especially when I can't for the life of me understand the logic outside of because it looks good for it to, for example, do things like, as far as I could tell, on all of these watch faces, there's not on a single one a battery level icon on any of them.
Yeah, I've got mine right here.
Which watch face are you on?
I'm on. You can, when you choose complications, you can add a complication that says battery life.
Choose complication. What is a complication?
When you have anything on a watch that doesn't say what the time is. Yeah, and again, you know, it's an extremely customizable thing, and you might. You know, if Pebble, you might be just more happy with Pebble. I mean, it's one of these things where, like, I have an Android device. I pick up my Android device, and I see all the little things that people can do with an Android device that I can't do with my iPhone. None of them do I want to do. But I get why people like them, and I get why people like Android, and I'm not like, you guys are wrong, you know. My one true religion of my iPhone's correct. No, you know, iPhone's for me, Android's for them. This watch might grow for you, or it might not. Apple may have just left you on the side of the road.
Well, here's the one thing that I think Apple has made very clear at their announcement was that this was – they were very clear to say this is the most personal device that they've created. Now, that's a double-edged sword because – if it is personal and it is not exactly what you want, it is very close to being a pebble in your shoe, which is very personal. You know, if it is exactly what you want, then it is something that aids your life without you thinking about it because it integrates exactly with your thinking. It's a very unique problem, I think, to solve, to say, okay, what exactly do I want? And it can't be as one size fits all as the iPhone was or even the iPad was, the iPad being kind of a new vertical and the iPhone being just, oh, wait, a competent phone? Like, this exists in a world for which I do not know. This is amazing. Like, I'm you know, I don't have one. I'm not upset about it.
I will say that there are two functions that I'm so, so thrilled are built in. Number one, the built-in ping to find your device. The fact that wherever you are, you can just run over and then click, where the heck is my freaking phone? And then it just shouts out, I'm over here doing that stuff. Like, that's huge. And the first time I took a call on my wrist was magic. It took 20 plus years to get here, but finally it happened.
Yeah, I was talking to Andrew on it yesterday, and I was shocked that was a speakerphone. It sounded great.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's going to be, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I get frustrated. Like, you can only have like 12 friends that you can do the little photo. You can, you know, automatically like press and share like pictures. And it's like, why? I mean, it's just, and it's funny because when you have one, all of your friends that have also have one, you immediately are going to get asked to do demos. You know, you'd be talking to someone, all of a sudden a picture appears on your watch and you know, oh, I've got to send Slash Film a drawing so he can show somebody this, you know, I've got to do this back and forth. So it's kind of funny the way that works.
Big shout out to my buddy Steve Kovac from Business Insider. He is one of their tech editors. He did a great week on review of the Apple Watch, which I very much enjoy his writing because it's he always appears less to be interested in being the most like lyrical on subjects. But I do trust his point of view. The summation of his thing was that he very much liked it. He thinks that the apps need to undergo a sea change in terms of like the ones that get it are magic. Like Yelp, Uber. Uber seems to be in places where people use Ubers a lot, just exactly where the future is headed. Just strip down your service to the one button solution and magic happens, you know, as opposed to trying to port an entire experience into this postage stamp on your wrist. But that it is a watch, you know, it is a watch that does amazing things. It's not a replacement for your phone. It's not, you know, anything else. And then if it grows to become something other than that via apps, which he seems to think is likely, and I would tend to agree, then it'll be great. It'll be a better product than it is because it'll have the ability and profit motivation for developers to expand faster than, let's say, things like the Pebble or the Android Wear, just based on usage numbers.
Yeah, well, and that's why, you know, because John's in the same position as you are, Justin. He's waiting on his, and it's like I don't want to crap on it, but there's some
Brian. It could be worse. You could be John or Justin.
Yeah. What's that? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's that.
Do you guys want to do picks?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Amazon Deadly app there. You just press a button and you name something and you can press one button and order it.
Oh, really? Yeah. Fully half the apps that I was excited about just don't work. The Shopify app doesn't for example, if I click on it right now, it says, yeah, you should log in to Shopify. And I'm like, that's not what I asked. You're supposed to be connected.
There was a great thing I saw on Twitter today, which I think it was like My Transit Times or something.
Yeah.
And so it's an app that just gives you public transportation transit timetables. And in their latest build, it said, Carl, thank you for your feedback. Now the app works correctly and you will see new times show up immediately. Everybody not Carl. Thank you for having patience with us and not sending us your angry heartbeat every 10 minutes.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Let's do picks, as we said. I'll go first. I have a pick. I watched this last night. It is the movie Trax. It's on Netflix streaming right now. It's about this Australian girl in 1970, a woman in 1975. Decided she was going to take a herd of camels across Australia, a journey that's basically equivalent of one side of the United States to the other. It also has Adam Driver in a supporting role, but it's mainly about here. It's Mia Wasikowska stars in it, really based on a true story of this woman who made this journey across Australia and, you know, why she did it, what motivated her to do it, and the trials and tribulations of doing it. And I dug it. So it's on Netflix streaming right now.
Heck yeah. What about you, Justin?
I'm going to go with a documentary that I watched the first half hour of today called All or Nothing at All. It's on HBO Go and HBO Now. It's about Frank Sinatra. Mm. It was directed by Alex
King of
Gibney.
Pop.
Yeah. By Alex Gibney, who apparently at some point was given the medal of documentaries by President Obama, and he was crowned the only man who can do documentaries. You might remember Alex Gibney from us talking about the Scientology documentary that he just did. He's like working on 7 documentaries at a time. This is I am a huge Sinatra fan. I've read a bunch about him. This is a well done documentary. Alex Gibney is a great documentarian. I tend to enjoy his non-political stuff more than I enjoy his political stuff. And this is certainly that. It does a good job of going into it. It's long. It's like 4 hours. It's a little, you know, it was described. I started listening to it because they mentioned it on Harmontown, and they described it as very friends and family, which it is. There are elements to Frank's personality that aren't quite spelled out in the ways that they are in some of the other stuff, including just how much of a sycophant he was to some of the mobsters that he sucked up to, and some of the machinations that it took to kind of make him the star that he is. But all that being said, Sinatra's a fascinating personality, and there's a lot of great stuff in there. So if you like Frank Sinatra and you like good documentaries, check it out. All or Nothing at All, 2 parts, each 2 hours on HBO.
I'm reading right now. I don't know how good or important it is, but I know that I'm glad that I from what I've read so far. But I'm reading Spam Nation by Brian Krebs, which I believe was a Twitter suggestion from someone, where he dives into the world of cybercrime and he's the editor in chief of KrebsOnSecurity.com, and he talks about you know, how he gets the information that he got and the adventures of flying out to Russia and you know, seeing the warring factions within the spam communities, former spammers turned anti-spammers using spam-like tactics to basically bog down the services of spammers so that they, you know, don't get very productive, and essentially spamming the spammers. It's fascinating stuff, and it's not necessarily my go-to book, but I'm glad that I'm in it. I think I'm really, really digging it.
Cool. Very cool. I'm in the middle of the Bob Hope biography. When I finish that, I'll give you guys my thoughts on that.
Right on.
It's a guy that lived to be 100 years old. 100.
Man, Bob Hope, he's a fascinating character.
Yeah. Gentlemen, it's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.